he says he was the first energy person, quote unquote, hired at the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, and I was the chief of the branch that initiated the Green Lights program, the forerunner of Energy Star. In 1996, Lawson adapted Energy Star for the small business sector, it having been limited to large corporate and government facilities. Following on eSource's first small business report, Energy Star used a combination of Dun & Bradstreet and the DOE CBECS data. I'll let you explain. Commercial Building Energy Consumption Survey data to establish that the magnitude of small commercial energy consumption and square footage closely tracks the fact that this sector accounts for about half of all of the U.S. economic activity and virtually all net new jobs. In 1997, under Lawson's management, Energy Star expanded to include religious worship or congregations in its programming, and now actively works with the faith community as well as small business sector on energy efficiency. Lawson has previously served as executive director for conservation, customer service, rates, and forecasting at the Lower Colorado River Authority in Austin, Texas, and prior to that as director, City of Austin Resource Management Department. He had earlier served as deputy director of the Arkansas Department of Energy. Lawson has an MPA degree from the Arizona State University, Tempe, and a BA degree from the University of Arkansas, Fayetteville. And I asked him to, him to tell me what he's passionate about, and this is what his response is that conservation and the environment have been my career path since I was a childhood teddy bear, since my childhood teddy bear was a Smokey the Bear. And my grandfather was apparently a charter member of the National Wildlife Federation. My passions are my wife and college student daughter, and creation, care, environmental stewardship work with the faith community. So I'd like to welcome and thank Jerry for coming all the way from Washington, D.C. to talk with us today. Jerry Lawson.
Oh, thank you. Oop. Little tech assist. Well, let me disclose that I only came from Fredericksburg. That's where I live. But I do take the train to D.C. most days. I telecommute every day. They'll let me get away with it. I was very impressed. I'd like to congratulate the city of Charlottesville on having a public servant like Lance Stewart and his affinity for numbers with charts and graphs and spreadsheets, because at Energy Star, one of our catchphrases is that you can't manage what you can't measure. It's all about knowing, where you started. What is your energy and water use now or last year or 10 years ago, or what do you want it to be in the future? So I think I would ask you to hear much of what I have to say, the gist of it being these are tools that as federal taxpayers you have paid for. So I'm your public servant also. So we'd like to describe to you what Energy Star has to offer, and if you're like most audiences, 75 or 80% of you recognize this label, this logo, and I dare say in Charlottesville it's probably higher, because I know what kind of folks a lot of you all are. You really, to have a city government doing these things is not average. It's a very good thing, and they're saving you money, and they're helping all of us keep our air a bit cleaner with energy efficiency. Most of what I have to say will sort of be geared to facilities in the faith community, but I will have some slides and I'll point out that most of this generally as strategy and tactics for energy efficiency are applicable in homes, in business. We also work with manufacturers. And there's something pretty significant about the fact that independent of one another, my colleagues that work with homes, with residents, and those of us that work in commercial facilities, and then my colleagues in manufacturing have all found that most facilities can probably cut their energy cost about 30%. And then that implies there are those that are getting 50% savings and 25% savings, but it's a significant number. It's significant money and significant pollution that relates to energy waste. Houses of worship specifically, there are about 310,000 houses of worship now, and it's kind of a growth area for construction. A calculation in which, you remember I said 30% is typically possible, but if they only cut use about 10%, that'd be about $200 million that the faith community could put back into their mission, into why they exist, rather than $200 million that's currently going to paying utility bills and that is also helping pollute. We like to do equivalence at Energy Star. This 2 million tons of greenhouse gases may not immediately resonate as to what that means, but that savings is roughly the equivalent of taking about 400,000 cars off the road. The economy, it looks like it's going to do that anyway, but this is not the way we want to do it. We want to do it through efficiency. And in fact, it's very exciting to see a new administration come in talking about a new economy based on green jobs and energy efficiency and renewables. This is something I've been working on since the 70s, and to hear two presidential candidates debating as to who's going to do a better job on energy efficiency and renewables was quite a thrill. And it looks like this administration is taking things very seriously. I know at EPA, the transition team has been there a couple of weeks. They're interviewing staff and trying to figure out how to move quickly on these things. I'll give some quick examples. I'll show you a slide of numbers in a few moments, but here are some annual award winners. We have an annual awards program for the faith community. I also manage small business, so it's all sort of commercial facilities to me, but we have two parallel tracks, one for small business, one for churches, synagogues, temples, mosques. So I think Pat Watkins might be interested in this United Methodist Church in Sparks, Nevada, that won an award this past year. Synagogue in Connecticut, and I'm going to talk a little about these in a moment, was an award winner in the past year. This church shows up. It's in Cape Cod, and their distinction is interesting in that their big claim to savings, and it's not why we gave the award, was $252 in a whole year. The significance was they increased their square footage 40% and held the line and saved a little money. On the other end of the spectrum, Prestonwood Baptist Church, a mega church, whose utility bill was bigger than I think your whole school system or comparable to your school system. Yours was 1.15. Yeah, they were paying $1 million a year. They have 1 million square feet, and about 3/4 of that was energy and 1/4 was water. Over a 26-month period, this church has saved $2 million, and they've essentially cut their electric and water bills in half with energy efficiency. And they do quote the scripture in doing so. Here's another United Methodist Church. Pat, they're just all over this in Clifton, New York. This is a convent in Monroe, Michigan. Some of you, they had some programming on them. They were called the Blue Nuns Go Green. There's a large number of, many of them retirement age, older sisters that have a wonderful convent and a large square footage there, and they've just done a lot of things. They're growing their own vegetables, and they've redone a historic facility, and they're conserving water. It's a great story. Here's some of the numbers I mentioned. Synagogue at the top, one of the things that appealed to us about their story is that a high school student had undertaken a project they have in every synagogue, the Eternal Light. Their Eternal Light is now photovoltaic. and they undertook a number of other efficiency efforts, and you can see the dollar savings and the carbon savings. I'm only discussing carbon here now, but as I talk about Portfolio Manager, the software that Lance mentioned earlier, we now include methane and nitrous oxide as other greenhouse gases that are measured by that. It was Dennis Union, United Church of Christ, that was a 40% square foot increase. But you can see there's a wide range of savings. We have a Zen Center in San Francisco, some other synagogues. The evangelical community's gotten very involved in climate change recently. This is the homepage for the faith community at Energy Star, and you'll see a number of features. I think the one I would most point out is the third bullet down under the what you can get, and that is the how-to guide. The real title is Putting Energy into Stewardship. It's about 40 pages. You can either download by chapter PDFs of each chapter, or you can use it online as web pages, and it's all hot linked to a lot of resources. But it is sort of a basic overview of energy efficiency for houses of worship, and it's certainly free and there for the taking. We have, if I could page down here, we have a directory in which all the congregations that are part of Energy Star are searchable. You could look in Virginia or nationally, say. It is not denominationally based, it's just state, but at this time. But just a huge number of tools and information there for houses of worship, and I'll talk more about them. I did want to just say that Energy Star has specific information for kindergarten through high school schools, for colleges and universities. The point being, and why Energy Star has all this specialization, is that buildings use energy very differently. Schools tend to be alike, of course, offices, but restaurants are very different from houses of worship, from your home. So we have a lot of specific information. And this little blue bar across the top, products, Energy Star, and why most of you know this is our products team. They work voluntarily with the manufacturing part of the economy, and they establish performance standards for a given product. And we have entire suites of products like commercial food service equipment. If you're a restaurant or cafeteria or food service operation, there are grills, steamers, hot food holding cabinets, et cetera, refrigerators, freezers that are Energy Star labeled, meaning that they are more efficient than the standard in the marketplace. Now, depending on the product, it might be 15% more efficient or 50% more efficient. That's all findable online, and we have calculators for virtually every product in which you can plug in your cost of energy, and it will help you calculate the savings you could find on an Energy Star product versus a non-Energy Star standard product. So at the products link or tab there, you can find everything about all the products. And for particularly for houses of worship, for schools, all the office equipment. We have virtually everything, computers, printers, copiers, faxes. In fact, computers were the first one in which we have now gone back to the marketplace, having saturated so that all manufacturers of computers, we reached a point where almost 90% of computers in the market were Energy Star, so we decided to ratchet up the performance requirement, and we went back to the manufacturers and said we need to do better. And we got back to where there are only, you know, a minimum of three manufacturers, and then it cycles again, and it's ever increasing in the level of efficiency. In the schools, we have information for students, particularly K-12. So there, this is kind of a live page, and it moves around, and there are all kinds of things there for teachers to help educate students about energy efficiency and global warming. The other half of what I do is small business, and as was indicated, small business is half the U.S. economy. So I'm very excited that if we're going to take some very strong measures to try to shore up our economy and save jobs and create new jobs, that small business is really the place we start. As I say that, I know who we've bailed out and who we're looking at loaning money to, but part of the reason for that is there are supply chains. About 10% of all American jobs relate to the auto industry. So you've got hundreds of thousands of small businesses that supply materials and equipment to General Motors or to Pepsi-Cola. But what we're trying to do very quickly, and we're working very closely with the National Association of Automobile Dealers. We've had a three-year partnership with them. They came to us, to their credit. We have about 500 auto dealers that have gone through training on how to use Portfolio Manager. And if this were a small business presentation, I'd be showing you some automobile dealers who've won awards from us. But we have restaurants, just all veterinarians, all kinds of small businesses that have achieved significant savings with Energy Star. I'll get this right eventually. Only get one off at least. Energy Star, over the years, we now have 80,000 some buildings who've used this mysterious Portfolio Manager software that I'll tell you more about. And through these 80,000 some commercial buildings, working with facility managers and other energy experts, architects, engineers across the country, groups like the Building Owners and Managers Association, the American Institute of Architects, the American Society of Heating and Air Conditioning Refrigeration Engineers. We have developed a fairly consistent strategic approach to energy management. Now, a given small business or school may go at it a bit differently, but it's very much a core approach that if you do one thing differently, you're going to come back to it later. You know, it's all got to be done at some point. So to the end of this type of strategic approach, in red here, we have Energy Star tools or actions that can address each of these. The commitment. We have the Energy Star Challenge. It started out as a corporate commitment, and now an individual can sign the Energy Star Challenge. You're basically saying, I'm going to try to cut my cost 10%. It's a very low-threshold, non-threatening challenge. We intended it that way. Some might say it's not aggressive enough. But the fact is, once people start saving money in their church or synagogue or small business or school, why stop at 10%? They keep rolling, and they keep looking at ways to roll over their savings into more savings. So this kind of low-threshold commitment to 10% through the Energy Star Challenge is really just the start for virtually everyone once you learn more about it. We have training and presentations. We work a lot, especially I do, with in the faith community and with small business, with associations, whether it be Virginia Interfaith Power and Light, where Steve Brown and Pat have really helped start here in Virginia, and it's a wonderful group, and maybe I ask them to say a word in a moment about if your house of worship is not involved with Virginia Interfaith Power and Light, I would suggest you take a look. We also work with individual denominations, with adjudicatories. We're about to train the entire Catholic Archdiocese of Baltimore and the Archdiocese of Detroit on using Portfolio Manager, because in the Catholic Church, the facilities are all centrally owned, and the maintenance is done, if I may, in a little more of a corporate approach. There's a more structured and organized, as opposed to the Baptist Church out there that's just locally owned and not quite as affiliated with a large organization. So we offer webinars and information and training and ways to, we have a webinar on lighting in houses of worship, and we provide that regularly. We haven't yet, but we're about to record these, so they will always be available online 24/7. If you'd like to keep up on this, if you you can sign up for our monthly electronic update, the e-update for houses of worship or the e-update for small business, and you will always see the announcements for when we're doing trainings. And you can also just find them online at the Energy Star website. If you just type training in the search tool, you can find all the classes we have to offer. We have guidebooks, fact sheets, calculators, and then, like I said, the 101 Energy Star 101 trainings. The ENERGY STAR qualified products I've mentioned, portfolio manager I'll talk about, and I've also cited some of our award winners, and we will put our new awards application online in January or February, and probably the deadline for application will be April or May, and typically we announce our awards in a national EPA press release in September. Last year we did our first webinar on how to apply for the award to help answer questions and encourage use. So, and it sort of comes back to portfolio manager can generate some very significant reports that will help measure progress and recognize achievement. This is just a screenshot of what the congregation's guide looks like online. On your right is the HTML or web version in blue, and on the left are the individual PDFs. And if I could urge you to look at one of these, it's in the bottom left-hand corner. Actually, it doesn't show up. Below that, the next one, under Get Started, is Sure Energy Savers. And it's sort of like the cheat sheet or the answers at the back of the book. It's a chapter that sort of says, if you haven't done this, do it. You know, this is your list to work from. And it helps address the fact, and this has been a problem for us as a national program, is energy audits. A good professional energy audit is what we recommend. It's the comprehensive and strategic approach, but not everyone can afford that, and in many places across the country, the access is even a problem. So a couple of approaches that are kind of stand-in for that, and they're not as good as a real professional energy audit, but this Sure Energy Savers list and using Portfolio Manager do a pretty good job of emulating. If you don't have, you know, the wherewithal to do actual energy audits. But so I'd really recommend this guide. It's a great tool. If you're probably more like Lance or some of you in the audience, you would want the 265-page version instead of the 40-page version. This is much more technical and detailed. And there is a special section on K-12 schools. So, and it's got a technical glossary, and of course it's available for everyone. It's all online, but it's a little more for the professional community. We have a full-time architect at ENERGY STAR. We work with building designers, and we, like I was showing a minute ago on energy management, we've pretty well figured out an approach to new facility design and what those components are. We have a tool called Target Finder that helps you set goals and determine what type of savings you need to meet goals. We also have a program called Designed to Earn the ENERGY STAR so that a new building is designed from the start to actually achieve the 75 or higher scale that was mentioned so that it can actually be an ENERGY STAR labeled building. And just to be specific, whereas we label products, we also label buildings. And if they meet certain performance standards, they can actually have a bronze plaque that says it's an ENERGY STAR labeled building. Now, in all of ENERGY STAR, the only thing that you would ever do that would have a cost is that if you want your building labeled, you do have to have a professional engineer verify your data. And that costs about a half cent per square foot on average. So that is a requirement. But you can, if you don't want to, you know, go that far and have the actual label on your building, you can still use the tool, generate the numbers, and know that you are deserving of the label, and that's a pretty good achievement. Okay, why would you want to benchmark or create a baseline for your energy use? I don't know if this has been seen in Charlottesville, but over the years, it emerged that this in red, the 400% variation, was on some public buildings. I forget if it's fire stations or schools, but it was in, you know, a few cities. And facilities that were essentially serving an identical purpose, and then when you converted to a per square foot basis, so it was apples to apples, we'd find these wide-ranging 400% variation from one facility to the next. And these are things that we have tried to figure out over the years. This is just this is not really telling you anything. It's just a graphic illustration that from year to year, things can be very different. For example, here in essentially the middle Atlantic area of the U.S., last May was the coldest and wettest May we had had in 50 years. And that's why we were talking earlier about degree days and weather normalization. We understand that's very important. So that's one of the things that the Portfolio Manager software calculates for you automatically when you put in your zip code. Never was a zip code so important, at least in this regard. It does a couple of things. It's not only weather normalizing all your data that you put in, and by data, we're talking about your utility bills from month to month to month. You got to put in at least 12 months to create a baseline. We know where you're starting. If you've done a significant efficiency upgrade and you want to know what you've achieved, well, get your utility billing data from 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Start your baseline wherever you want it. Then you can kind of see what you've achieved and maybe go back and figure out your return on investment for what you've ever already done so that you don't feel like you were prematurely intelligent, you know, that you somehow missed the boat on this. You can go back. We talk to people all the time about how this software works for them. I will say that it is not something you download. It exists on the server of a federal contractor. The reason for that is several-fold. One is we're always tinkering with it. We're always improving it. Like I said a moment ago, just in the last month, we now, based on your energy savings, can calculate not just a carbon emissions reduction, but methane and nitrous oxide as well. Those are also powerful greenhouse gases. Next spring, in April, in addition to calculating energy efficiency savings and water efficiency savings, it will be able to work with renewable energy savings. So we're very excited about that. And this tool has become so powerful that groups like LEED use it for its energy calculations for new LEED buildings. Some of these groups like BOMA and ASHRAE are increasingly using it and relying on it for certain things. So we're trying to make it the national standard. And in fact, last week my colleagues were speaking with the federal government of Canada. They're looking at using Portfolio Manager in Canada. And we actually already, for major Canadian cities, the data is available. To get started, and we actually have live online webinars that walk you through how to get started. We can handle up to 100 participants at a time in such a live webinar. But it takes probably an hour or two if you don't have all your utility billing data at hand. Even if you've lost the files, your utility can provide it to you. In the state of California, utilities there are all now doing what we call automatic benchmarking. They have an agreement and are hooked up to Energy Star in such a way that if you're a utility billing customer in California and you say, please benchmark me, the utility will automatically send the data and you can create your file. I should go back and say why it's on a server and it's not something you download. Not only do we keep it up to date, but also keeping it on a contractor server instead of a federal employee or a government server, it cannot be FOIA'd or sought through the Freedom of Information Act. We didn't want corporate competitors to be finding out about one another's building space. We didn't want vendors to be shopping for likely opportunities to pitch their wares. So and as a federal employee, I don't see your data. It's password protected. It can only be accessed by the person who creates the file and the password. But it has some great capabilities. If you wish to share it, you can share it. So the whole school system or the whole city can have a master account, and then all the individual meters or buildings can be there, and you can roll up all the numbers into a single dollar savings or greenhouse gas emissions reduction for the city of Charlottesville or for the Interfaith Power and Light group or any given organization. I've just started working with the Pepsi-Cola supply chain, and they don't even know how many small businesses that is. And it's a lot of them are not small businesses, but some 20,000, they think. So we're going to be working with them to do this type of thing so that PepsiCo can figure out how they are preventing greenhouse gas emissions and what their totals are. Obviously, then once you've created your baseline with your 12 months of utility billing data, and it'll be a little more robust if you put in 24 months, you then are just looking at updating it. And you can do that once a month, or you can do it every 6 months, or as often as you want to be up to date. Then it has a function for generating a report. After you've done something, once you have your baseline of 12 months, going forward, you can generate reports and find out whether you're doing better or worse. We have what we call rateable and non-rateable spaces. Schools, hospitals, offices, warehouses, water, wastewater treatment plants are all rateable spaces. That is, they can earn the ENERGY STAR label and be rated between 1 and 100 points. Non-rateable spaces at this time, houses of worship, restaurants, a lot of other type of facilities. We just don't have the money or the time to, you know, do them all at once. We add about 3 or 4 a year. And it looks like houses of worship may be in line to have a rating developed. Even so, it'll probably be a year or more. But even if there's not a rating available, if you go in and enter your data, it will compare you to the national average for houses of worship or the national average for restaurants. So there's good information there in any event. This is the data you need to set up your account. It's something you pretty much all have. We don't promote this fact, but if you wanted to do this account for your home, you can do that. I wanted to tell homeowners that at the, I'm off the web page now. We'll be on it again in a moment, but we have some tabs across the top for home improvement. We have a tool there called the Home Energy Yardstick, and you can get a little bit of a rating there. We're working on developing, as we develop the rating for houses of worship, we'd like the members of the house of worship to be able to do a rating, and then with the permission of the individual homeowner creating their own file, then the entire house of worship, the whole congregation, if they wanted, could say, our congregation has prevented this much greenhouse gas emission. We've saved this much money, so that you can roll the numbers together. It's just a very sophisticated calculation device. We're ENERGY STAR, but typically, I was a department director in City of Austin, and back then, the number one use for electricity by the City of Austin was treating water and wastewater and pumping it around. So water conservation equals energy conservation. And it's, even if it didn't, it'd be good to do, and we would be for it. But tracking your water costs is very important as well, and ultimately it's some greenhouse gas emissions you're preventing. Well, covered most of this. Along the bottom, you're seeing the URL addresses, energystar.gov/benchmark is where you can go work with this. As I said, tracking campaigns are being done. There's the yardstick address for the bottom on homes. And we're doing pretty well on time, so I'd like to say we can, let's take questions as we go if they occur to you while I'm saying something. I'll try to remember to repeat your question and recognize you. This is an example. I spoke to the Virginia Episcopal Diocese last September and just left this on. This is an example of a sharing campaign in which the diocese could take into account St. Paul's Church here in Ivy. You could, at St. Paul's, you could have the members' homes. You can have the meters for multiple facilities. The Virginia Diocese could take its camp at Shrinemont in the mountains, or the diocese facility at Roslyn in Richmond, and they can roll together all their numbers, same as a corporation. A small business owner might have multiple quick service restaurant franchises. A small business owner might have some multiple auto dealerships. You can roll up the individual meter data into one account and manage your business that way. We do this to protect the environment. EPA protects the environment for human health and for ecosystem health. We are very interested in the type of emissions that can be prevented. In the early 90s, when we started doing this, we knew there was not much chance for the Kyoto Protocol, but we adopted really kind of a political, what we call a no regrets justification and strategy. And under President Bush 41, the father, we started Energy Star, and it's had very strong bipartisan support since then. It's a non-regulatory approach. I think we're necessarily going to have to do more and to start regulating, but we're hoping that we have learned so much in the marketplace that in a cap and trade, which we we hear about a cap and trade approach for carbon and greenhouse gas emissions. We actually have already had a successful cap and trade effort. You don't hear much about the ozone layer these days, about the hole in the ozone. That's because it has substantially on the way to healing. And through a cap and trade effort based in the market with very little regulation, we created a value for those type of pollutants. And we allowed a certain amount of pollution. And once you went beyond that, you had to pay for it, or you had to buy the right to pollute. Now, I've been an environmentalist since before the word existed. Like my grandfather and I were, you know, composting, and he was telling me not to waste when I was a little kid, and I just grew up with it. And instead of being a, want to be a cowboy, I want to be a forest ranger. So I'm an environmentalist, but there are certainly environmentalists who think cap and trade is too lenient for the business community, and I respect the opinion, but I will leave it to them to get in there and fight for all they can achieve. But in the meantime, we in government have to work in the marketplace, in the capitalist economy, and that's where cap and trade places a market value on pollution, and we've already had a success with it. So it's probably the approach that most elected officials are talking about these days, and I think in this Congress in 2009, it may well pass. I was just with a bunch of evangelicals a couple of weeks ago, and that was what they were talking about. They are looking at how they are going to promote what, for in their parlance, they're calling creation care. And I'll take a moment and say that when I started working with the faith community about 1997, I found that the National Council of Churches was already there. Lutherans, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, a lot of so-called mainstream Protestants, the Coalition on the Environment and Jewish Life was already there working on environmental issues from a faith perspective, and the Evangelical Environmental Network was already there, and we've developed some wonderful relationships with them. And I was just speaking with a friend a moment ago, the Presbyterian Church USA just joined Energy Star a few weeks ago. Baha'i USA has created a new master account and portfolio manager. I've already said we're going to be benchmarking a couple of Catholic archdioceses. And it's really the fun part of what I do is working with the faith community. I have been thoroughly vetted on church-state issues. I've been investigated by the Inspector General of EPA. There was kind of a far-out political group that didn't want EPA working with the faith community. I don't think they really cared about church-state. They just didn't want environmentalists working with the faith community because it's such a powerful combination. And in a sense, they were right, because since we've been working with the faith community, we have gotten very close to just a wonderful across-the-boards ecumenical interfaith group of people across this country that from a faith tradition basis, from a scriptural basis, didn't worry about saving money first, but decided that really their faith had called them to be better stewards of the earth. And whether from the Bible or the Quran or the Talmud, they were wanting to take action and be more true to their faith. So I will say the evangelicals have been a little, well, there was a group in the mid-90s already working on this, but groups like the National Association of Evangelicals, representing some 30 million folks, about 26% of American voters are evangelical. And I can say to you, it's been a sea change in the climate change debate, the global warming debate, in the last 3 years since the evangelical community leadership, not everyone's on board yet, but much of the leadership has decided that this is an issue of faith. And they speak of a reawakening and worrying more about creation care, environmental stewardship, and particularly who are the first to suffer from global warming. It is the poor, the billions who live on the seashores around the world in very crowded, impoverished conditions. So this is just a natural for the faith community, and the speed with which groups like Interfaith Power and Light, now in how many states, Steve, 28 or?
Yeah, I think that's the latest. It's a moving target, but I think it's 28.
Right. It's just kind of a joy to try to keep up with it. And they're always kind of pushing on us to do better and do more, and it's just great. And we've seen people of faith named among the most influential people in the nation by U.S. News and World Report and other groups. The Reverend Sally Bingham, Richard Cizik from Stafford, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs of the National Association of Evangelicals. And Rich Cizik works in a very wonderful interfaith way with Islam and Judaism. So it's been bringing a lot of people together. It's really been bringing faith traditions together to worry about what's going on. So back to this familiar chart. This is the key areas are, again, the sure energy savers. It's, you know, a lot of, some of them are lower cost, lower cost items. It's the controls, the occupancy sensors, the programmable thermostats, the compact fluorescents, the tuning up your HVAC at least once a year, if not pre-cooling and preheating season. They're just all the little to-do items. They're things you can check on a list, because when you've done it, it's done. If you have an LED exit sign, it's probably going to last 50,000 hours, you know. And I can say it's fun to watch. We started out in lighting, if you recall, green lights. That was an effort to find out if the marketplace cared about energy efficiency and if they would trust EPA to work with us. And we went to people that we had sued and on environmental problems and said, now we, you know, let us work with you. And they were open to saving money, believe it or not. We said, if you can earn your typical hurdle rate or the prime interest rate plus whatever percentage you want to state, will you sign an agreement with us and agree to invest in lighting efficiency wherever you can earn that? And about half the Fortune 500 did that. For 3 years, I had no office in Washington. I had a plane ticket and a laptop. And I met with about five companies a day, and I was a traveling salesman for the environment. And it was kind of a tough but a wonderful time. It's better to look back on it than to think I got to fly out tomorrow. But once we proved that, and lighting was a good place to start, once we proved that that concept worked with the Fortune 500, who are all about bottom line and business, we knew we were onto something, and we merged that into Energy Star. We knew there was more than lighting. We knew there was all the other equipment and products. So we phased out green lights and phased into Energy Star. But lighting remains sort of the workhorse and a key place to start. One reason is that they're typically very high return on investment. Typically, lighting quality is improved. And especially those of us in the Sun Belt, there's often about a 20% savings on air conditioning. If you have very inefficient lighting, all you're doing is heating. You know, it's a bulb that's getting off as much heat as light. So once you become more efficient in your lighting, you can look at your air conditioning bills being reduced. And those are important things in new construction to design correctly so that you don't buy too big of a heating air conditioning unit in the first place, because you can actually decrease your air infiltration, increase your insulation, decrease your energy use in a lot of ways, and you can end up with a heating or air conditioning system that's oversized. I've actually seen cases where the air conditioning system can actually cool off a space and turn itself off before it's removed the humidity. That's called latent heat. So you'll have this cold, clammy feeling. And that can happen if your heating air conditioning system is of a certain size, and then you become real efficient. Not that you don't want to become efficient. You just need to consider that, especially in new construction, size the equipment so you pay less in the first place. I think we've gotten past this idea that energy efficiency costs money or that the environment or the economy are in conflict. That's an old myth, and it's just going to die as quickly as we can move ahead with all this. City of Austin, there we found that a dollar spent on energy efficiency locally, buying insulation and more efficient windows or whatever equipment we had back then when we did it in the late 80s, we found that a dollar spent on energy efficiency stayed in the local economy 8 times longer than a dollar spent on the utility bill. Now, you spend your dollar on the utility bill, what happens to it? Well, sure, you pay some local salaries, but primarily the bulk of the dollar is going to the New York bond house that financed the construction of the centralized power plant, or it's being also exported from the local economy for coal or whatever fuel you're using, because you probably don't, you know, generate your own fuel locally. We defeated a 500-megawatt coal plant in the city of Austin. We substituted conservation. We substituted efficiency in the homes of the people. We were a municipal power provider, so we own the electric utility. We own the water, wastewater utility. So we also did not build a large water, wastewater treatment plant by substituting water conservation. So you can't do that with all your needs, but there certainly is, and it's all numbers, like Lance is pointing out. It's all calculable. There is a marginal cost for the next power plant, and your utility should be investing in the efficiency of their customers, in their homes and businesses and churches and synagogues, up to that dollar value per kilowatt hour, as if they were building a new power plant. We called it the conservation power plant, and we displaced coal with it, and we can be doing that today if we were more aggressive. Here is sort of part of the Sure Energy Savers, and it's just kind of the reliable workhorse technologies and products that keep getting better and better and cheaper and cheaper. And they're just things that virtually every building ought to be doing. And they depend on some certain cases, like a tankless water heater. There's cases where you would do that or not do it, but like a water heater that's 7 years old, you could, instead of running out and buying a new one, you could buy a blanket at Home Depot or Lowe's, and then you could insulate the first 3 feet of the heating pipe. But if your refrigerator is 10 years old, you probably would see actually a strong return on investment if you got a new refrigerator. Now, that raises questions about recycling, but we have to look at the whole environmental issue as a whole. So you'd want to be sure that metal, and I don't know, a very high percentage, maybe 90% of all U.S. steel is recycled. So there's probably a good story to have there. Efficient lighting. Gosh, I look forward to the day when this curly compact fluorescent bulb is outmoded, and it won't be too long. Definitely within 10 years, we're all going to be doing LEDs. I get to talk to LED experts and go and see seminars, and it's just amazing. Certainly your holiday lights, if you need some new ones, you can get LED ones, and they're going to run cool and not be a fire risk, and they're going to last a long, long time. Some night lights. There are a lot of sort of novelty and inexpensive applications for LEDs, but the real workhorse would be the LED exit sign. Because your exit signs, even if they've got fluorescence in them, are going to, burn out at a much quicker pace than an LED. But right now, and I use the term workhorse, I think the compact fluorescent is the workhorse of energy efficiency across the boards. I've still got compact fluorescents at home that I paid $13 or $15 for. Some of you probably do too. You look like that kind of crowd. And they're still working. And they're these big clunky things that cost a lot, and they've got they don't even fit in all the lamps because they're so big, and they hang down out of the ceiling or they're sticking up. But now, for $2, you can get one that has better quality and it's faster on, and it's, you know. So that's the power of the marketplace, the mass manufacturing, mass consumption, supply and demand of driving down prices and driving up quality. And that's very much part of the Energy Star strategy, is we're trying to commercialize the good stuff, trying to drive the bad stuff out of the marketplace. So that's what that logo is about on the products. This probably is best just to illustrate that for every existing type of lighting, and there are a lot of different types of lights, even here, you know, just look around here, there's probably a half dozen different types of lighting in this room. There are greater and lesser energy efficient options even today for all of these. Yes, yes. The question was, what can a person expect? I guess you kind of stated as one light bulb to one light bulb. We have a calculator online that will actually do that for you, and that's a number I should be able to spin off, but I just haven't been asked it frequently enough. But yeah, there's a calculator. You can plug in any number of light bulbs. We do have a program. Did somebody do a calculation? I'm sorry, did you have a comment or a question?
No, I said that was unintended for your plug-in as many light bulbs.
Oh. I do that. It's just the poverty of the language which we deal here, us energy guys. We have a program called Change a Light, Change the World. That's an annual campaign. And there are a lot of calculations there. So if you want to look up Change the Light or just go online, there's just all kinds of numbers for, I think we did a calculation on if everybody in the country changed 5 light bulbs. You know, it's pretty amazing numbers in dollar and carbon reductions. How about this? If every American home replaced one light with an Energy Star qualified light bulb, we would save more than $600 million in annual energy costs and prevent greenhouse gases equivalent to the emissions of 800,000 cars. So that's 5 light bulbs a home. Yes?
Typically, when you buy a compact fluorescent, it's a buy this bulb, it will take you hundreds of dollars over
its life. Yeah. Part of the problem with answering that question, and it's a good thing, is that now, what compact fluorescent are you talking about? Is it a 150-watt equivalent? Which I put in my wife's, she has a small business in Fredericksburg in her window. So she's getting the lighting of like 150-watt equivalent for like 22 watts or something. Are you trying to get a 100-watt equivalent or a 60-watt equivalent? So that's my excuse for not being able to answer your question. LED exit signs, they're... You can buy a new one for $85 or $100, and these prices are tough to catch up with because are you buying them in bulk for a school district? Are you buying, you know, 2 for a small business or, 7 for a house of worship? They're affiliated with Interfaith Power and Light Shop IPL? Shop IPL, shopipl.org. is a place that the faith community can get really good prices on compact fluorescents and this, that, and the other kinds of products and equipment. And at Energy Star, we have a website we cooperate with DOE called Quantity Quotes. If you just do a search for quantity quotes at the Energy Star webpage, it will show you. And it's not comprehensive. It's not all Energy Star products, but it's a significant little list that you can say, okay, I'd like to buy, you know, a bit of a bulk purchase here, and you can ask for a quote, and then there will be some number of vendors who will respond to your quote with prices. And, you know, gosh, it's getting so that, again, you go to Lowe's, Walmart, Home Depot, they're especially compact fluorescents, the choices and prices are just really great. And it's getting better. I mean, other, you can look for LED, particular programmable thermostats, you know, your filters you need and insulation. Here are, just so everybody knows, it's not all about compact fluorescents or things that look energy efficient. These are some of the fixtures that you can look. Indoor, outdoor, ceiling fans, vent fans, there are Energy Star models. There are all kinds of more attractive or architectural models. We have the fixtures themselves can be Energy Star rated. Outdoor fixtures with photocells. Ceiling fans, you know, we went through a phase, and I see a lot of folks here that we went through kind of like when we were young, there were still some ceiling fans around, and then air conditioning came in, and for 20, 30 years, you never saw a ceiling fan until the oil embargo started hitting, and then in the, you know, late 70s, 80s, 90s, ceiling fans made a comeback, and they're just, you know, they're just wonderful. I've put in 5 or 6 ceiling fans every home we've had, and you can lower, you know, comfort is a function of air motion and temperature and humidity. So if you can play with air motion a bit, you can let your temperature rise a few degrees. So you save money. Vent fans, very high quality, quiet vent fans that are very, you know, competitive with any other product. For houses of worship, pendant lighting. These are some Energy Star qualified manufacturers named here that provided some slides. But you can see that there's no excuse any longer in a house of worship. You know, some beautiful fixtures. Controls, again, just you can, what I'd call your attention to here are some of these energy savings columns in restrooms, in corridors, storage areas, places where we think maybe somebody will come in there or we just forgot to turn off the light. These are some very large savings that indicate how often a light is left on and nobody's there. So that's the idea of having, and you can do these in your home too. You can see the person holding something you can use like a switch. You can override it and turn it off and on, but you can also leave it on automatic, and it will, you know, help the kids or mom and dad remember to turn lights off. There's another version. There's not only occupancy sensors, but vacancy sensors. They turn the lights off, but then you have to turn them on manually, and there are places where it makes more sense to do that. Just general building maintenance. Buildings need tune-ups. They need to be maintained to operate. So there are just a lot of things that ought to be done in a given building besides the heating, air conditioning. You need to adjust your timers and thermostats, and filters and systems need to be cleaned, and refrigerants. And I know it gets to some point, it sounds sort of like balancing your checkbook and brushing your teeth. You know, these are things that are good for you, but you know, you got to have the discipline and the sense to just keep doing these things day in, day out, and year in, year out to take care of the buildings you already own, your home or your house of worship or your school. We have some 50-plus types of products that are Energy Star qualified, and this is just a partial list. And some of them, there are things that are a little odd that you won't see here, I think like traffic lights. Let's see, one of my favorites is transformers for utility companies. Not something you're going to run out and buy. But we are always looking for what is the next opportunity and how many are in the marketplace and how much energy do they waste and how easily can the manufacturer make the change. So that's why you see some of these are very consistent groups of equipment and others are kind of surprises. These two I'd point out for both schools, for houses of worship. Office equipment, there's a list of the type of office equipment that's Energy Star. You don't typically throw out something good. When you need a new one, you buy Energy Star. Commercial kitchens, a lot of houses of worship have a commercial kitchen in them, and certainly schools. So we have suites of equipment for both of those. I've talked a little about the all caps, never supersize. That's what I was talking about a moment ago, about having too big an HVAC system. It doesn't necessarily keep you comfortable. It can be the, kind of the opposite effect if your building is otherwise efficient. We primarily energy people and increasingly pay attention to water, but I always try to find things. I know a lot of my faith community friends, gonna have coffee. And so you could be looking at how are we drinking our coffee? What coffee are we buying? Is it fair trade, shade grown? Youth groups could be selling compact fluorescents instead of, you know, the kind of things kids say, candy. They're just innovative ways to make use. And EPA has specialists in recycling. We have specialists in a lot of other areas. When I was in Austin, Texas, we used xeriscaping or natural landscaping to help save water. And in the course of it, you find out, well, gosh, they're more pest resistant because they're attuned to this natural environment. So here in Charlottesville, the city and the schools and anyone who can influence landscaping ought to be looking pretty strictly at Virginia-based landscaping instead of bringing in things that are going to be more temperamental and not so pest resistant and maybe require more watering. I mentioned we have an awards program for faith community and small business. Schools are eligible under our larger kind of corporate program and cities for recognition there. So this is the page for anybody can take the Energy Star Challenge pledge here. You can see that the most recent signers there on this particular day were Pacific Gas and Electric, Georgia Power, Southern California Edison. Huh. Electric Utility Day. And then C.B. Richard Ellis owns all kinds of commercial real estate across the country. There have been, Roy's printing shop has probably been there. I mean, it's small businesses, congregations, and individuals that pop up there once you sign. Then we have a lot of co-brandable tools and banners and posters and materials that you can use to co-market and to co-identify with Energy Star. So this is these are the websites that my team works with and developed. The bottom number is toll-free 888-STAR-YES. If nothing else, you can always call there and say, this is my need, this is my want. Where do I go? They can send you, if you don't use the internet, they can help you out, or they can tell you where to go on the website. This EPA Small Biz and Energy and Security, that's my woman-owned small business that does all my tech support. That's where you can send technical inquiries to us, and we have a button for that at the congregation, the small business webpage. So if you want us to do a calculation or you want us to, like I was asked a moment ago on light bulbs, or compare some kind of technical product against another, you can send us an email there. And if we don't know the answer off the top of our head, we will research it. We have architects, mechanical, electrical engineers that are your taxpayers' dollars are paying for. So it's available to you. So let me flash quickly a few things. If you didn't get one, this is kind of a good general brochure outside for homeowner. And it will tell you some of the things available to a homeowner. In the schools, I mentioned some of the things we have for students. We did some co-marketing with Disney on Horton the Elephant. So we have downloads, and you can order these in bulk for schools, for Sunday school or for your public school. We have downloadable and online versions of brochures for congregations and small business. And I only bought one set. I'll leave them here. For new homes, new construction, you know, they're Energy Star labeled homes. If you're going to buy a new home, it can be Energy Star. Heating and cooling, appliances, home electronics, lighting. Then I printed one. This is the guide for small business called Putting Energy into Profits. It's the kind of analogous to the Putting Energy in Stewardship guide. So I will be happy to sit down now or take questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate time that everybody's put into this. I look forward to us, you know, putting our heads together, putting our resources together. And thank you very much for your time. You can go out and network and drive home safely. Oh, you have a question? Yeah. Go ahead. Any questions?
Well, a little help, and this may not be the answer. We do have an online directory of service and product providers. It's a searchable list. You can go in and put in Charlottesville or your zip code, and it will show you who we know about. It will not be a comprehensive yellow pages of what's local, and there's not a certification either. Now, there's a little bit of implied consumer protection because, you know, if we get a complaint, we look into it, you know. But we're not certifying them. But they are businesses that have joined Energy Star, and they're most likely trying to do a good job of being energy efficient. So that's one place to look. And I'll defer if anybody here locally knows about energy audits available. Please, yeah. Come on down.
Hi. If you go to the Spark website, there are listings of 6 local energy auditors there and other organizations and local resources.
Web address, please?
Spark-change.org.
Thanks. You ought to get all of them in our service and product provider directory. So they're there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you how to
all
do
right.
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Steve.
In response to that same
please.
Question.
And watch this thing.
Jumped up. In response to that same question, energy audits are very tricky to fund and find, particularly for faith communities. We had a steering team meeting for the Virginia Interfaith Power and Light this morning before this meeting. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. We are hoping, as we get our new staff director for Virginia Interfaith Power and Light on board by hopefully late spring of the coming year, and also between now and then, to develop some resources and databases across Virginia to help people in identifying pay-for-service energy auditors. But the other issue we're struggling with, one of our board members who is working with the Episcopal faith tradition in Virginia, had one of their congregations that did an energy audit, and it was $9,100 to get that professional audit. And in that case, they did it. And a good quality professional audit with a contract, a performance contract, is well worth the investment. But the truth is, a lot of congregations, particularly smaller congregations, can't afford that kind of price. And so one thing our Episcopal partners are working on is developing identifying individuals who are members of their congregations across the diocese who have at least some technical background, for example, architecture, engineering, and training volunteer teams on how to do energy audits for churches, for congregations. We Presbyterians have been trying to do some similar training through the Presbytery of the James, though it's not as detailed in the more professional level energy audits. So this is an issue. We're hoping that Interfaith Power and Light in Virginia can become at least a partial clearinghouse for how to help people learn how to train trainers in their own faith traditions to do that, and or identify list of competent pay-for-service professionals. But these kinds of when you're looking at HVAC especially, and you're looking at major building changes, renovations in terms of like insulation, those kinds of things, it's sort of difficult to find affordable audits for faith communities at this point. But we're going to be trying to work on that, and we'll welcome networking with a number of you and other faith traditions on that issue.
Your website is vipl.org, right?
Vipl.org, but we're also currently under the umbrella of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, which is a group that brings together all of the major faith traditions in the state of Virginia. Part of probably several of us have been talking in between time. A lot of us keep trying to reinvent the wheel, and we keep trying to make things available because we don't know where to go. And that's true also of Virginia Interfaith Power and Light. And what we're trying to start figuring out how to do is how to network so that we're not all having to reinvent the wheel, but develop some of the networks where we can share the information and where we can learn from our various faith traditions, and also address the question like Pat and I were talking earlier. Some people like to work ecumenically in a geographical locale, and that works best. But a lot of folks, you know, like Pat was saying, some of my Methodists, they won't go to something unless it's Methodist-sponsored. And so we're trying to figure out how to network that so that we can find the ways we can cooperate and the ways we can share information and learn from each other, particularly in the area of things like energy audit.
Thank you, Steve.
He raised that example. My goodness, a church paid $9,000 for an energy audit. If they had called our toll-free hotline or sent us a question asking us if they'd done that, we would ask them some questions. Very good chance we'd have said, look, just buy $9,000 worth of good stuff. You know, don't, you know, here's some no-lose, sure energy savers. You don't have to. You know, again, I was trained as an energy auditor back in Texas, and energy audits can be the place to start and the right thing to do, but they can also be a waste of time and money, depending. So, you know, a congregation or some, you know, if you don't, and also you can just be overcharged for a good product, you know, buyer beware. So that's why, because we're not in a position to do energy audits, that's where the sure saver list and portfolio manager can help sort of emulate that. But I try to carefully not say, I mean, we are for good quality energy audits, but they're just not available to everyone. Are there other questions or comments? Any other resources that we ought to promote? All right, well, I'll let you all close it down.
I'm going to echo what Denny said, I can't thank our speakers, Pat, Lance, and Jerry, enough for spending the day with us and kind of moving us forward on this path that we're all trying to take. Our goal will be to, we've got your information, will be to not have this be the end of the line, but to network both the schools and the churches. I've found in my work with St. Paul's, our work with St. Paul's, that it's been really beneficial for me to watch as they go through the process. They've learned from me, so we're all looking forward to having this be just the beginning, and with your information that you've provided, Leslie Middleton, as you came in the door, we look forward to being in touch with you and sharing information as we go. And again, thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to being in touch.